everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. We are really excited today to have a special interview for you with the writer for the movie that's coming up today on Hallmark Channel, the author of the book that the movie is based on, Suzanne Nelson. And she's the author of You're Baking Me Crazy. And Suzanne, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's really exciting to be here.
What we like to do with our guests is we like to give you a chance to introduce yourself and tell us what inspired you to become a writer.
Oh, wow. So I'm Suzanne Nelson, and I have been a children's book writer for, a long time. I think about 15 years now, but I've actually been a writer unprofessionally for my entire life, pretty much. So I wanted to be a writer from the time I was about in second grade on, and I actually wrote down in this little book that my mom kept that tracked our school years. When I was in second grade, I wrote down that I wanted to be a writer, but I had no idea how to spell, so I wrote R-I-T-E-R instead of W-R-I-T-E-R.
Yeah.
So from a very early age, I was writing, and after I graduated from college, I went on to become a children's book editor in New York City. And so I worked with other people on their writing for 8 years in the city. Oh. before I started getting published and writing full time on my own. That's and great. I've written a whole line of books for Scholastic, the foodie book line, which started with Cake Pop Crush and also includes You're Baking Me Crazy, which is going to be the Hallmark Channel movie that we're all going to hopefully be watching tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 Central. And in addition to that, I've written for Knopf Books for Young Readers, which is a division of Random House, and I've written for Penguin in the past. So I've got, I've written over 20 books. Not all of them have been under my name, but some of them have been under pseudonyms when I was first starting out, which was really, that was fun. So I love my job.
One thing I wondered about, you said on your website that you had to learn, or maybe it was Ruth's interview, I can't remember, but you said that you had to learn to write what people wanted as opposed to just what you had, your ideas. And I was curious, right, though, like sometimes it can feel so random what people want. And at least to me, sometimes I'll have a podcast where I think, people are going to love this. This is so funny. This is so enjoyable. And it just kind of, it doesn't really. And then ones that I just think it's fine. You know, I sincerely do like every episode of my podcast, but I'm very ridiculous that way. But you know, the ones that I don't think will make that big a splash, and then people love it. You know, it does very, very well. I feel like it's so hard to know what people will like.
Right. Right. So yes, I mean, that is definitely true. And as a rule of thumb, when I talk to other people who want to be successful published writers, the first thing that I say to them is don't follow market trends, because by the time you figure out what is hot in the market at any given point in time, by the time you write it, it will be over. So you definitely want to write things that are meaningful to you personally, but you also have to tell a story that will appeal to other people. So I'm actually working with my daughter right now, who's in fourth grade. She's writing one of her first short stories for school right now. And I literally just told her yesterday, as I was reading through it, I said, you have to make sure that the reader wants to read this story, and that you have this idea in your head for this fantastic story, but you have to put that down on paper or no one else is going to understand what you're saying. So I think that's really part of it. And what I learned as an editor when I was working on other people's work was you definitely have to write things that the ideas that you're in love with as a writer, but they also need to appeal to a larger audience, because otherwise you're just going to end up writing for yourself without anyone else seeing it, which is perfectly fine. You know, you still improve your writing skills and everything by doing that.
It's almost more like fan fiction.
Right. So that's a whole different, yeah, that's fan fiction is a whole nother ball game, which I've never really done any of.
You're kind of just writing for yourself when you're writing fan fiction for the
right.
most part.
Right. So, right. But, you know, for example, my line of foodie books for Scholastic, you know, I wrote Cake Pop Crush and then You're Baking Me Crazy was the second one. And I started getting responses from readers and I started learning what they really enjoyed about those particular books. And that helped me as I went forward to write the rest of the books. And there are, the ninth book in the series comes out, next, September in early yeah. September. And, so they're all very different. They all have different storylines and different characters, but, you know, I always try to include some kind of a friendship and family dynamic that is very timely for my readership, which mm-hmm. is tweens. You know, mm-hmm. their ages fourth grade up, so you know, 9, 10-year-olds up.
And I think somewhere you said that you were writing a picture book, and that was interesting to me because my sister is actually a picture book author. Uh-huh. And now she's transitioning, hopefully, I think she's doing a graphic novel, I think, next, and some other things. So she's kind of transitioning, hopefully, kind of out of that or combining, adding on to it. So how do you kind of, when you're writing for different genres or age demographics, I guess might be the word, is that kind of challenging to sort of put on your hat for that type of writing?
Absolutely. I will say that I truly believe that for me, writing picture books is far more challenging than writing a novel. I tend to be, I think I'm just a novel writer by nature because I'm long-winded when I write. Picture books are extremely challenging because you have such limited words in which to tell your story. And with a picture book, the illustrations are so important and they make up so large of a portion of the actual book. So when I was the children's book editor, I worked a lot on other people's picture books. And that was fantastic for me because I was really good at working on other people's books and helping them make their books fantastic. But when it came to writing picture book manuscripts myself, it was very challenging.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah.
So it's a totally different type of writing style. And the fact that you're telling a story in so few words makes it a real challenge. When I teach picture book writing workshops to elementary school kids several times a year, and I usually always tell them most picture books are 32 pages long, and I actually have practice picture books that I give out that are 32 pages long, and I say, you know, the best way to write a picture book is to map it out on all of those pages with the text and the art so that you can see how much room you have and where the story is going. Mm-hmm. It's a really, in my mind, it's a very different art form than novel writing.
Yeah. This is interesting. Yeah, I think definitely, especially because you don't have the illustrations in front of you. So when you're writing, you have to kind of, I mean, unless you happen to be an illustrator slash writer, unless you combine them all. But yeah, it's definitely a challenging thing. I've seen it with my sister.
Yeah, that's very true. And what a lot of people don't know is, you know, as the writer for a picture book, you don't have any say in who the illustrator is for that particular book. Yeah. And many times the author and illustrator is different, as you know, because your sister is a picture book writer. And so, so you're writing the story, and then usually the illustrator comes after that fact. So with the picture book that I have coming out next fall, Over in a Stable, which is with Zondervan Kids, that that particular picture book, I didn't see the artwork for that until months after the manuscript had already been written and revised and edited. But that's a really exciting process too, is waiting for the art. You know, because I was an editor, I really appreciate how much effort and time goes into selecting illustrators on the other end of the publishing process when you're at a publishing company. And so it was so exciting for me to see the illustrator get chosen and see the final artwork come in. That was fun.
Yeah, I bet. That sounds fun. So how do you decide to narrow things down to middle grade as opposed to a YA or a younger category? Is that sort of decided for you by the publishers?
No, I mean, I've dabbled in a little bit of everything. So I have a YA novel that was published about 5 years ago now, called Serendipity's Footsteps. And that was very much for older teens and crossover into women's fiction. And it was a much more serious historical fiction, young adult novel about World War II and the Holocaust. So I really enjoyed writing that. And at the same time, simultaneous to me writing that, I was working on the foodie line for Scholastic. And this particular line has just really been very popular with readers. And I get letters all the time from readers who, a lot of times I hear from them saying that they hated reading until they picked up one of these books, you know, K-Pop Crush or You're Baking Me Crazy. And then all of a sudden they were finishing the book in a day and they had to have all of the rest of the books in the Scholastic line. And so we had no idea when I wrote K-Pop Crush that the line of books was going to take off the way that it has. I'm thrilled by that. And I'm especially very happy to know that I've reached readers who may not have otherwise found a love of reading if not for this particular line, and then they branched out from these books. And that is probably one of the most gratifying things for, I think, any writer, is to know that you're reaching a readership that needs what you're writing. It's very satisfying, and it's one of the reasons why I keep writing, and why I think a lot of authors write, is because you're reaching those readers and you know your words are impacting them in some way.
Yeah, I think that's really true. It reminds me of I have younger siblings who are way younger than I am. And my younger brother, when he was little, so this was younger than your age demographic, but he was 6, maybe 7. And he was struggling to read and not doing well in his reading at school, but he would read with my mom all the time and really enjoy it. And so finally one day she's like, "I don't understand. Why are you struggling at school and you really like reading these stories?" And I think she was particularly reading the Hardy Boys at the time to him. Anyway, and he was like, my brother was like, he's like, "That's because those books are dumb." Those books are dumb. And I'm like, yeah, it's really true that like a lot of what we like, primers and stuff like that, they're not good stories. They're boring.
I think really, I mean, yeah, it's all about finding the particular book that any particular reader is going to fall in love with.
Yeah.
And it's that moment. And it's funny because, you know, like I said before, I have three kids, and for each of them, that moment has been different, and it's been with a different kind of book.
Yeah.
So I think that's true for everybody. You have to find those books that speak particularly to you. And honestly, I love writing for middle grade because that period of my childhood was not a particularly easy one. I had some family drama going on, and also, you know, being a teenager is just hard to begin with, and socially it's just so hard.
No matter what
your family dynamic is, or what your, you know, how popular you are, how many friends you have, it's just hard. And I still remember that period of my life so vividly because it was such a struggle. And there were a lot of things I wish that I had been more of during that time. I wish I had been braver. I wish I'd taken more risks. I wish I hadn't been so afraid of failure. I wish I had worried less about how I looked and how other people thought about me.
Yeah. I think especially those middle school years are especially rough. I swear I went through like four groups of friends in 3 years. It's a tough time.
It really is. And that's what I kept all of my diaries and journals from that period of my life. And my friends and I in middle school and high school had little notebooks that we would pass around to each other between the classes. And these notebooks were filled with all of our angst, right? The crushes that we had on boys, the fight that we had with our parents, the fight that we had with the BFF.
It's like your burn book.
Yes, totally. And so I love going back and looking at those because they really give me a lot of great insight into where I was emotionally at that point in my life. And I can tap into that when I'm writing these stories. So I think this niche just fits me because that period in my life has lingered in my memory.
Yeah.
For so long. And I mean, I've written other middle grade novels too, totally different from this foodie line. The most recent one is called The Tale Magnolias, and that was written for Knopf Books for Young Readers. And that one has more magic in it. It has an elephant named Magnolias that I love. It has an orphan named Nitty in it. But even that one takes place during the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl years in the Midwest. And even though that one is, isn't as contemporary as my other ones, that one still deals with a lot of issues of, you know, finding friendship, finding a place where you belong, finding family, and whether that's a traditional family or non-traditional family, who cares as long as it's you know, a family that loves and accepts you. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely agree. One thing I was wondering about with the foodie books, I think bacon is the only one that is a savory food. They're all their sweet food. So I was wondering, do you have a big sweet tooth? Is that why? Or do you picture doing other savory? Like, would we have a one about barbecue or something like that?
Right. So I actually, it's funny because I keep an ongoing list because my friends and I, we always laugh about the puns, you know, the crazy puns that are the titles for these books. And I'm really lucky to have some great editors at Scholastic, and it's very much a collaborative process when we're coming up with the titles. Sometimes Scholastic has an idea for a title, sometimes I do. So one of my favorite books in the line is called I Only Have Pies for You. one of my favorite. I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, every writer loves each book in a different way. You know, every book that you write is kind of like one of your children. So you love each book, but for totally different reasons. And I really love I Only Have Pies for You. and that one is just really cute and really fun and is based in a small town in the South. And I'm a Texas Aggie. So I got to relive my 4 years in Texas when I was writing that book. And I set it in a really small town along the Brazos River. And it was just really fun to write. But yeah, so because it's a collaborative process, you know, we come up with the titles and the food of choice together as a team. Yeah. And bacon is the only savory one, which is funny, but I have some ideas for some other savory ones, which I can't tell because they're top secret. I don't know whether any of those will come to fruition. I will say that there is going to be a 10th foodie book. I can't reveal the title. That one is also dessert, but yeah. to answer your question about the sweet tooth, I absolutely have a sweet tooth.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Fresh baked goods are, I mean, you put a hot brownie straight out of the oven in front of me and I'm eating it within two. I can't even wait for the pan to cool before I'm scooping it out. I will scoop it out as in molten lava form and eat it. So chocolate, fresh baked cookies, brownies, those are my weaknesses. Absolutely.
Yeah, you could have like I ramen you or something like that.
I know, right? Yeah. Right? Well, I think it would be fun to do one with pasta. I think it would be really fun to do one with pasta. And I mean, we could do lots of different savory ones. Yeah. So I guess it depends on, you know, ultimately how many books in this line of books there ultimately ends up being.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that's a big question. So it's still going. It's still going. So we'll see.
Cause right now I think you have a shake, a pie, a hot cocoa, macaroon, bacon, donuts and cake pops.
Yes. And we have sundaes too. Ice cream Sunday. Okay. My friends will come. Yes. I mean, you can't say the titles of these books without at least smiling. I mean, most of the time when people find out for the first time what the names of these books are, they instantly start giggling. And, you know, I mean, who doesn't love a good pun? And so I think that's part of the appeal. I think, you know, these books are intended to make the readers feel good at the end of them. You know, they're just like little rays of sunshine to give hope to teenagers everywhere that they're going to survive their adolescence.
Which is so needed. That's great. Yeah. I love the titles so much. I think, cause especially when I heard that they were Hallmark was making a You're Baking Me Crazy, I thought for sure that the title would end up being changed because so many times with Hallmark, the announced title is way better than the final title that they end up going with. And they've had just such bland titles in the last little while, something like a winter romance or like Christmas love story. I mean, like, could you get more generic than that? I mean, it's like the kind of title that you give when you're just like at the initial brainstorming phase of your script. You're not even, you know, you're just like, I'll just put winter love story and like
right
now. And so I was so excited when I heard that they were actually keeping the name. I'm like, wow, this is so great. And so, you know, my expectations are pretty high for this film, not gonna lie. And and just on the title alone, I think it's so funny. And I mean, I never met a good pun that I didn't really enjoy. It's great.
Right. I mean, it's really kind of ironic because my dad is actually the king of puns. And when I was growing up, half of our dinner time conversations centered around how many bad puns and cheesy puns he could make just going in a string of puns.
I think it's a dad thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, we grew up with that. So I think it's very, very serendipitous that I ended up writing a line of books that revolve around, foodie puns.
Yeah.
But I was really excited that Hallmark Channel decided to keep the title too, because, you know, for a long time, everything involving the movie was very top secret. So, I wasn't even sure if it was, we were waiting for confirmation to see if it was actually going to happen. And then I got confirmation that, you know, it was actually going to happen. And then the next thing I knew, it was in production, and then they were filming, and then the filming was done in, you know, something crazy time frame,
yeah,
you know, 15 days or some really yeah. intense time frame. So the whole thing happened really quickly after the ball finally started rolling. And it was really thrilling the first time I saw the movie poster, which is absolutely adorable. And I love Natalie Hall and Michael Rady standing there, and they're yeah. surrounded by these really colorful fruits and, I mean, vegetables.
But no bacon. And I was no slightly bacon. Disappointed that there was no bacon.
No bacon. I know. And you know, but again, this is, you know, as the author, I'm basically on the periphery watching all of this yeah. unfold, which is really exciting for me. And, you know, never in a million years did I ever imagine that any of my books would become a movie. It was kind of a pipe dream. And I always thought, oh my gosh, you know, if only that, and I would kind of laugh about it. And then this happened. And so it's beyond my wildest dreams, honestly. And I'm thrilled. I think everybody loves the title. It's making people go, is that really the title? But at the same time, they're laughing and then they're intrigued by it. And so I think it's a win-win.
I do too. I absolutely love the title. And I love Natalie. I got to interview her, and she's the best. And Michael Rady has actually had a really good
track. Interview.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I listened to the podcast and it was so great. I loved hearing everything that she had to say about the movie, and she just seems so sweet and yeah. so down to earth. I'm so excited that she's playing Cleo, because writing the character of Cleo, it was one of my favorite parts of writing this particular book. I loved Cleo's character in the book, and she was just so vivacious and so full of life and passion for what she was doing. And I think that's gonna cross over into the movie. And I think Natalie is just the perfect Cleo. So I'm over the moon about her being cast as Cleo.
Yeah. Yeah, I really did love that interview too. I loved how she kind of started interviewing me after a while.
I loved that too. She was throwing all those questions back
yeah.
at you.
Yeah. So that one was a really, really fun one. And I just really like her. And Michael Rady, I mean, he's been on a winning streak. He had two of the best movies for Hallmark last year, and he's just great. But I'm really curious to see him in this one, because both of the ones last year were both on the more serious side.
Yeah.
But now this one's a little bit more of a comedy, it seems like. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing that side of him.
Yeah, I think that'll be fun too. I mean, I remember when he played Costas in Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
Yeah.
And I mean, first of all, I loved those books. And I'm such a sucker for any, I read middle grade and young adult novels as a staple, because, you know, I want to keep up on what's out there. And I also read, you know, just to keep my own creative juices flowing. It helps to inspire me. And I read looking at other authors' crafts, but so I loved those books, and I loved that he played Costas in those movies. So, I'm excited to see him in this. And I think it's going to be funny, and it's going to be cute and light. And I think everybody needs a little bit of happiness and a cheer right now. So I'm glad that it's coming out when it is. I think it's very timely that we need this little dose of sunshine.
I agree. I definitely agree. And so, yeah, this is a very loose adaptation, it seems like, of the novel, because obviously you have a different protagonist
right.
than in the novel. You were cool with that? You were fine with that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I knew, you know, this goes back to what I was saying, you know, with the author kind of being on the periphery. I knew that once Hallmark Channel decided to move ahead with the movie, that that, you know, anything could happen with the storyline. And I'm thrilled because I'll see tomorrow night when I watch it, because I haven't actually seen it yet. Yeah. So I'll be watching it for the first time along with everybody else. But they kept a lot of the elements in the story, and Tessa, who is Cleo's niece in the book, and Tessa was actually the main character in the book, You're Making Me Crazy, but she still has a role in the movie, and she still plays Cleo's niece in the movie too. So I was really happy that Tessa was included in the movie, and I just kind of look at it as, you know, in the book, you see the story from Tessa's point of view, and you see her story unfolding as she works at the food truck. And in the mm-hmm. movie, we're going to get to see it from Cleo's perspective. And we get two romances for the price of one, because in the You're Baking Me Crazy book, there's a little sweet crush romance going on for Tessa. And then in the movie, we're going to have the whole Cleo and Gabe food truck rivalry slash romance.
Yeah.
So I think it's great, because I think, you know, you get two fun, sweet romances, one in the book and one in the movie, that you can enjoy, and they both tie together.
Yeah.
So I'm happy about that. And I'm really happy that Hallmark Channel chose to pick it up, because it's a great venue for family viewing. And, mm-hmm. you know, this is a movie that families can watch together, and then they can go read the book, or if they've read the book already, then they can watch the movie together. There are a lot of parents and kids that read these books together. You know, daughters get their moms involved in reading the books with them, and there are book clubs and things like that. So I think this is a great outlet for all of that.
Mm-hmm. That's a really healthy perspective, I think, because I mean, you don't have any control. You don't have any control, so you might as well be happy about it and enjoy it.
Right.
So
right.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to it. And it'll be interesting to see just this different take now that I've read the book. And but I had a couple questions just about the book version, at least.
Yeah.
So was Tessa was she based on anybody that you know, or just kind of a unique character?
No, I don't usually base my characters on people that I know, because that gets really dangerous. you don't ever want to get a phone call from a really good friend that says, what? You put me in your book?
Right.
So I think I pull inspiration from a lot of different places, and a lot of the characters that I portray in these books all have elements of pieces of my personality as a teenager in them, I would say. So, you know, Tessa's passion for helping with her aunt's business, that is a little bit personal for me, because I come from a long line of farmers, actually. and so a lot of the women in my family have gone on to have roles helping and owning family businesses. And so I've been able to witness firsthand the dynamics that go into small family businesses and what it takes to run them, and all the different dynamics and conflicts that can arise with that. So I think a lot of that went into the book, and went into Tessa's passion for wanting to help save her Aunt Cleo's food truck and help her with the food truck competition, and her intense loyalty to her family. I also feel like there were some elements in there, you know, the mother-daughter dynamic between Tessa and her mom in the book. I had a mom who, for a variety of reasons, had to work really long hours. And now that I am a grown woman and I work as well, and I'm trying to raise my kids too, I completely see it from a different perspective than I did when I was younger. Mm-hmm. But when I was younger, it wasn't always easy. And I didn't always understand the way I do now, how, as a mom and a wife and a professional woman, you're getting pulled in all these different directions all at once. So that dynamic is present in the book. And I think I pulled a little bit from my personal experience with that too. But I mean, overall, you know, all the characters in this particular line of books, I try to portray realistic conflicts that they're dealing with. And also, I want them to all be strong characters. I want them to all be fighting for something that they believe in and be brave enough to stand up and fight for it. And so I think that comes across in her personality in the book too.
Yeah, I think so. That makes sense. It is like I feel like everybody has that moment of growing up where you realize, oh, my parents were just trying their best. They were just figuring it out as they went. They're not that you like humanize your parents, because when you're a teen, and especially in the middle school years, they're the authority figure. They're the one. So it's easy to point out any degree of hypocrisy. So if somebody's enforcing the rules, then they have to be perfect. Otherwise, oh, you're a hypocrite. You're terrible. I hate you. And then you realize that, oh, they were just trying to figure it out.
It's so true. And I remember moments when I was so hard on all of my parents at different points in that time in my life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I write the scenes where there's always one big family blow up in every one of these books.
Yeah.
And one of my editors calls it, you know, she said to me recently, she goes, "Suze, you're so good at the dark night of the soul moment," where the teen is crying in her bedroom and she's just had a huge fight with her mom and dad. And, so, you know, I tap into a lot of the emotions that I felt at that age, and they weren't always logical. They weren't always rational. And, you don't tend to see your parents at that point in your life as anything other than the people that are preventing you from having all this freedom that you want. And so now I can look back on those moments and I can write it from the perspective of who I was at that point in time, but then I can also tap into the parents' emotions and know exactly how, you know, the mother figure is feeling in that moment, in that scene, or the dad is feeling in that moment. So I think that really helps. And each year as a parent, I think it changes my perspective on that too, because I'm still growing as a parent and all of those things. So I'm still learning. And I think with each little bit that I learn, or I fail, or I succeed, it helps me a little bit to create those scenes.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Tessa has these bobby pins that she has in order to help remind her of things and of who, kind of who she is, and of different things in her life. And I was wondering where you got that idea from.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay, so one of my favorite movies to watch each Christmas, I subject my children and my family to this every year. And they kind of hate me a little bit for it, but I just love this movie so much. So it's A Wonderful Life, of course it is, with Jimmy Stewart. And in that movie, his uncle, I can't remember the name of his uncle, but his uncle is constantly forgetting things. And his uncle keeps these rubber bands wrapped around his fingers. So have you seen that movie?
Oh yeah, of course. I can't think of the uncle's name all of a sudden.
I can't either. Yeah. I can see the
actor in my head, but he has the strings to try to remind him.
He takes the strings off as he remembers things. And so when I was writing that moment with the bobby pins, I was thinking about It's a Wonderful Life and the strings around his fingers. And I thought it would be really cute to incorporate that into Tessa's character with the bobby pins. So that's where that came from. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool. So one thing I liked about the book as well is I felt like it was actually, like, I thought the male characters were actually pretty strong. Like, I think that it maybe on the cover and things, it might seem like a, for lack of a better word, a girly book, but I actually don't think it is. Like, I think that Asher and Tristan are pretty good characters, And so I was wondering what you thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, these books, for lack of anything better to say, I think that they tend to be construed as, you know, girl reads, but yeah, I mean, the boy characters in these books, again, I always try to include realistic dynamics for, all of the characters that are, you know, of that age in these novels. And, those characters tend to be dealing with different family dynamics and issues too. And I always try to make sure that that comes out a little bit in the storyline as well. Their particular subplot that it's strong enough that it carries through. Asher was a fun character to write. And the dynamic between Asher and Tessa in the book was, you know, there was a lot of animosity and misunderstanding between the two of them at the beginning of the book. And then as they get to know each other, their perceptions about one another change. And I love doing that when I write books, is setting up a dynamic where your first impressions of a particular person are very different than how you see them as you get to know them. Because I think that's one of the things we all struggle with as human beings.
Yeah.
You know, when you see someone for the first time, you can't help making this initial first impression, which is probably totally inaccurate. And then as you get to know them, you learn more about them and you start to see them in a different light based on what you know about them. You kind of see what they're, you know, who they are inside, who they are in their soul.
Yeah.
So I try to convey that a lot in my books because I want that to be something that readers take away from my stories. Is that, you know, you can change the way you feel about people. They may not agree with you on everything. You know, you may not see eye to eye on some things. But your attitude towards other people that you may or may not get along with is, you know, it's up to you to change or decide how to deal with it. And it's a very real thing. I think all of us as humans mm-hmm. have to deal with that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think there's no doubt about it. That's for sure. All right. Well, we'd like to end with some fun questions, silly questions.
Yay!
So first question is, what is the best ice cream flavor?
Ooh.
For your ice cream best book.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So when I was growing up, I loved black cherry vanilla ice cream. That was hands down my favorite. However, as I've gotten older, my tastes have changed. And now there's this awesome ice cream place where I live in Connecticut called Deborah Ann's. And they make their own ice cream. And they have this chocolate brownie fudge ice cream. Mm-hmm. It is unbelievable. It has these enormous chunks of fresh baked brownies in it. And it is just chocolate ambrosia. And I love it.
That sounds really good. Yeah. All right. What is your favorite color?
Ooh, my favorite color, lots of different shades of blue. I love calming ocean shades of blue, like turquoise mm-hmm. and teal. And yeah, I love oceany colors.
All right. What music are you into right now?
Ooh. So we've been having dance-a-thons in our quarantine isolation state. So when I'm writing, it's funny. I can't listen to any music with lyrics when I'm writing because inevitably what starts to happen is I start to sing along with the lyrics, which totally breaks my concentration. So when I'm writing, I have a whole soundtrack playlist, with instrumental soundtracks, this is really funny, but one of my favorite ones is from How to Train Your Dragon. I love that soundtrack. It's really powerful and fun. And I also listen to the Pride and Prejudice soundtrack, but that's for work. So for the dance-a-thons, I have this oldies but goodies playlist, and it's got the Eagles, it's got Pink Floyd, it's got Bruce Springsteen, it's got, the first concert I ever went to was Neil Diamond, and so there's of course Sweet Caroline is on there, and we all sing it at the top of our lungs. Paul Simon's on there. So we listen to a lot of that. And then if I'm really in the mood to go totally crazy with my daughter, we put on Broadway musical soundtracks and we sing Julie Andrews and the Sandman our lungs.
I think you and I are very similar music-wise, it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, but what better to cheer you up than a great Broadway musical? I mean, really. So I'm actually going to see Hugh Jackman in
oh my gosh.
I'm
so jealous. Take me with you.
Yeah.
Not
until next December, but I'm so excited because The Music Man, that was one of my mom's favorite musicals. And I was raised listening to musicals and watching some of the old great musicals with my mom, and my grandmother loved them too. So The Music Man is up there on the top. So I'm excited to see him.
I was there on Broadway when they did the, it was like 2000, they did a revival of it. And it has very great personal meaning to me. I would give up an organ to see that show. I love the show. I saw it in 2000 with my grandma and my cousin, who both now passed on. And so it's a very special memory to me and a very special show. And also my sister was Marion in her school show. And so just a lot of personal meaning. Plus, I just love the show. I love the meaning behind the show about, you know, second chances and there's no lost causes that everybody.
I agree. Good. Marion the librarian. You should see if you can get tickets.
I wouldn't ask you, but I feel like those tickets are gonna be like $1,000.
No, they weren't. So really? you should go online after we get off this call. Go online, see if you can get tickets.
And that's so cool. Yeah, I love Broadway, and I love the classics like you were talking about. I have very fond memories of as a little girl listening to the Beach Boys and dancing to the Beach Boys. That was really, even before the Beatles or any of the other stuff, that kind of stuff I would find when I was more of a tween or a teen. But
yeah,
I remember as a little girl just dancing and listening to the Beach Boys.
I grew up in Southern California, and my dad loved the Beach Boys, so we listened to the Beach Boys a lot. And my oldest son he went through a huge Beatles phase, so we have the whole listen to the Beatles too. I love that playlist because when I put it on shuffle, I never know what song is coming, but I know it's going to be a really happy one.
Right. That's great. Lately, my big thing, my calming music has been putting on like an 80s power ballad.
Oh, that's mix. Awesome.
I don't even know why, but like, it'll be like REO Speedwagon. It's just like, something about it. It's just like, okay.
I love REO Speedwagon. And you know, we watched Frozen 2 a couple of weeks ago, and my son and I, so you know the
Lost like the in the Woods,
Chicago-esque ballad in that movie. So we paused it and we replayed that scene about 5 different times.
Yes.
My oldest son and I were singing at the top of our lungs. We started singing Chicago's Our Love Was Meant to Be.
You're My Inspiration.
You can sing You're My Inspiration while the movie is playing with that ballad, and the songs harmonize with each other. So we cracked up because we were doing this whole montage. It was so much fun. You have to try it.
Watch
that scene and sing You're My Inspiration while you're watching it.
Yeah, I was, I still am obsessed with Lost in the Woods. I thought it was so funny.
It was hilarious.
My friend and I were just dying laughing. The whole theater was laughing.
Yes.
It was so good.
It was brilliant. And I'm such a sucker for Disney movies too. I watch them shamelessly with my children, and even alone I watch them. I mean, yeah. I just I love them. So
I loved I loved the original Frozen. I loved Frozen 2. I loved the whole idea that basically the villain was their grandparents.
Yeah.
That they kind of learned this whole new thing about their family, and they had to deal with that. And
yeah, I loved that too. Yeah, I thought that was really timely and a really great thing to open discussions for a lot of things with kids.
So.
Yeah.
Very good. So what is your go-to date night food? You read all these foodie books.
Oh my gosh. So if it's a date night in, which we have been having more and more of. So my husband and I love to order sushi. I love good sushi. And also Thai fusion. I have a huge weakness for Thai fusion food. If we're going out, I have to say I love going places where I can get really good fish. Mm-hmm. I love fish. I love mild fish. So, yeah. But sushi is our go-to date night. If we're staying in and we're watching movies and stuff like that, definitely sushi. Yeah.
See, that's smart because a lot of stuff, it's like, do I really want to get that going out? Because I can just make it super easy. Like I can make a thing of pasta or chicken Alfredo or something like that. That's easy.
Right.
Whereas like sushi, I can't really, maybe I can learn, but it's not gonna be the same as like a sushi person. Sushi,
right.
Yeah. Or or most Asian food is really hard. Like I don't even have the spices
right
that I need. And so I'm with you there. So what's your favorite go-to date night activity?
Oh my gosh. Well, usually we go out for dinner. I mean, that's a really big deal for us because, we don't have a whole lot of time during the week just to have alone time together, to have a decent conversation without getting interrupted 500 times by our kids. So we go out for dinner, and then we have, in the town where I live, we have a really nice Main Street. So if the weather's nice, we walk up and down Main Street. Aww, sometimes,
that's so
yeah, cool. Sometimes we go see a movie, but a lot of times we just go out to dinner because that in and of itself is really nice. We get to sit and look at each other across the table and, we're not having to tell our kids to behave at the dinner table.
Right.
So just being together and having that time together, no matter what we're doing, is always really nice.
Very good.
That's
all right. So dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs. I had cats growing up, and I had this awesome cat named Fluffy, and he was the best cat ever. He figured out he was tall enough that he could stand on his hind legs and open the garage door and sneak into our house during the day, and he would make his way to my bedroom. And no matter how many times my mom would put him in the garage, because she was actually allergic to cats, but she would put him in the garage during the day. He would be, by the time I got home from school, he would be waiting for me on my bed.
Aww,
so
that's so cute.
He was awesome. But then when I was a teenager, we got dogs, and I have a dog named Sadie. She's a miniature golden doodle, and she's she's awesome. Yeah.
Those are so cute. Very good. Yeah. Okay. Beaches or mountains?
Beaches.
Me too.
Definitely beaches.
With you there. So would you rather be in a fancy dress or sweats?
Oh my gosh. Well, probably a fancy dress just because it's fun, but not for a very long period of time. I mean, a fancy dress for 2 hours and then I'm done. Then I'm out and I'm in sweats.
That sounds good. As long as I don't have to wear heels, I hate wearing heels. So what is your favorite holiday to celebrate?
Christmas. I think Christmas. Yeah. Christmas is really, it's just a
hard
happy time of year.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Last question. And you can, I don't know if you have one, but do you have a favorite Hallmark movie that you
like? Well, I have to say, I grew up watching the Hallmark Hall of Fame movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The two that really stuck out in my mind from the years that I spent watching those, I mean, Sarah Plain and Tall was probably one of the first Hallmark Hall of Fame movies that I ever saw. And I loved it. I just absolutely loved it. Glenn Close and, and Christopher Walken, you know, that was amazing. I also loved The Magic of Ordinary Days with Carrie Russell. I think that was a great one. Hallmark Channel movies. So I actually, my daughter and I watched The Winter Princess with Natalie Hall. And that one was fun. Really sweet. I mean, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Roman Holiday. I'm a big fan of old classic movies. And that one, you know, the premise reminded me of Roman Holiday with Audrey Hepburn. So, and my daughter just, she loves stuff like that. So we really enjoyed watching that together. The 7-Year Hitch was
That one's so
good. Cute. Yeah. So cute and so funny. And last year for a Christmas one, we watched Just in Time for Christmas, the one with Christopher Lloyd and William Shatner as as Santa. And that one was really cute too, because I liked the idea of how there can be, you know, I'm so intrigued by the idea that there are multiple paths that any one person can take in their lives. And depending on the choices you make, you know, you go down a totally different path. And so I loved that movie because of that idea, the whole concept.
That one's a deep cut. That one's a deep cut.
Yeah. And cool. right now my daughter and I are making our way through When Calls the Heart, which I'm enjoying that. And it's, she's the perfect age to watch stuff like that. And so, you know, we're in a household with three men and two girls. So we're a little outnumbered. So the more Hallmark Channel stuff we get to watch, the better.
That's cute.
We need our Hallmark Channel fix.
which season of When Calls the Heart are you on? Do you know?
Oh my gosh, we're right at the beginning, so we're not even. I think we're almost done with season one, so we're still right at the beginning.
Okay,
We have a long way to go.
Get ready. Start building yourself mentally, spiritually for season 5.
Oh no.
That's all I'll say.
It sounds like you're giving me, this is what people told me when I watched This Is Us, and this is what everyone was telling me about This Is Us. I can't watch one episode of that show without crying.
Yeah. Well, very good. That was great. You did a great job. This is really fun to talk with you. I love hearing about writers and their journey, and I just admire that a lot. And so thank you so much for coming on and talking with us, and we'll be excited to see the movie. And do you have social media you'd like to share?
Sure, I do. So you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Suzanne Nelson Books. And on Twitter, I'm at S Nelson Books. And then my website is just SuzanneNelson.com. And if anybody wants to make a lot of bacony treats for the movie night tomorrow night, I've got all these bacon themed recipes up on my author blog right now. So everybody should definitely go check it out. And if you have bacon in your house, if you actually have bacon among the things that you're able to find at your local grocery store, then make yourself some fun bacon treat for tomorrow for your movie night viewing.
Yeah. And let us know on Twitter what you make. That would be fun to see recipes and stuff. So very good. Well, you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes and YouTube and Rotten Tomatoes. So check that out. And then also make sure you're following the podcast at Hallmark Pod and Hallmark Geeks Podcast, all over social media and on iTunes and YouTube. And if you're listening on iTunes, please leave us your ratings and reviews. We appreciate it so much. And if you're listening on YouTube or watching on YouTube, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. We appreciate that so much. And we have our patron group, which is really fun and so appreciated. And we also have our merch store, which has really fun Hardee's and Hallmarkies inspired merch and postables. So check that out. And thank you so much, Suzanne. This was a blast. I really enjoyed talking with you. And we'll hopefully be able to have you back sometime, because I thought this was great. And good luck with the movie tomorrow and your new books and everything.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you too. It was so much fun to be on, and I hope I get to come on again. That would be awesome.
That would be fun. All right. Well, let us know what you think, everybody, and we'll talk to you all later. Bye.
Bye.